We have a quorum. We may have lost a few members, but they may be forthcoming. So I think we ended with the staff didn't dump the pile of amendments somewhere along the way. I think they brought them, they discovered them and brought them back. So you had an opportunity to hide them, but but you don't do things like that. So are there further amendments, Senator yes. Bonoff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Figure now is the time. There's not that many people here. Just get it out there. So my amendment does two things. It's the A31. So if the staff could pass out the A31, please.
Senator Bonoff offers the A31 amendment.
So some of the members who have not been on K-12 a long time might not understand that a few of our districts have a cap to which even if they wanted to go out for levy referendum, they can't because we've got the cap. And I have some of those districts, and they are under a whole set of different arrangements, and so they're considered grandfathered districts within that framework. And so really what my districts would have liked best is if I had offered an amendment to lift the cap. And that is what I would have wanted to do, but if I were to have done that, then we would have had to carry a levy, property tax levy target that would have been higher than we could have afforded. So I'm not offering that. And instead, I'm offering changing a different piece of the way we treat these grandfather districts. The way it is currently in law, when other districts get a dollar of inflationary levy and inflationary dollars on their levy, the grandfather districts only get a quarter. So for every dollar the rest of them get, the grandfather districts get a quarter. And so my bill just says that every district gets the same thing. So it says for fiscal year, and I could ask Mr. Nauman to go into more detail if members want, but it says for fiscal year 2013 and later, for purposes, the inflationary increase equals the inflationary increase. So it's basically saying that, and the voter has to approve it, so it's voter approved. So that is one piece of this amendment. The second piece of the amendment changes the language when school districts are going out to renew an existing referendum. It says on the ballot, by voting yes on this ballot question, you are voting to renew an existing capital projects referendum that is scheduled to expire. The reason why we would like that is because voters may think they're voting for a new tax and therefore would vote no, when if they understood it's not a new tax, it's just in fact something that they had been paying that was going to expire, it still gives them that choice. It's not on autopilot, and I actually voted against that last year, but it does make that clear. So that's the two pieces to the amendment. And I stand for questions, and if there are questions, I'll defer to Mr. Nauman.
Senator Bonoff, did you say that we've got language similar to that for operating referendum, but this adds it for bonding?
Yes. Okay. Well, I didn't say that, but is...
But that is the case. I think
yes.
We did get that language.
Yes, we did. Right.
Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you for adding
I
that.
Was trying to figure out the first provision of your amendment, how that is different from lifting the cap.
Madam Chair,
maybe Senator.
Oh, go ahead, Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Nauman could help us out with both this meaning and. I know that you haven't had a chance to do any fiscal impact. If you could give some, it would definitely have a property tax impact.
Madam Chair, indeed. I think the best way to think about this is that for those districts that are in excess of the cap. The statutory cap that we have, and that's under on line 1.9, you can see that there's reference to 26% of the formula allowance. So when the formula allowance goes up, the statutory cap recognizes that there's a 20% increase in the overall cap in association with that. There were some districts that were in excess of the cap when that cap was originally put in place. And in, I think it was about 2003, Paragraph B was put into place to allow those school districts to recognize some essentially cost of living increases in their total allowance for the operating referendum. It was originally done as an index to the consumer price index, and then beginning in 2008, it was a calculation based on the growth in the formula allowance. And as Senator Bonhoeff pointed out, that for those districts, when you add a dollar to the formula, there's a corresponding 25% reduction of that growth, or not reduction, 25% increase of whatever growth occurs on the formula allowance that's recognized for those grandfathered school districts. So in the case of this bill, when we add a 1% increase as a result of the bill, those grandfather districts would get a corresponding 25%. Basically, a quarter of a percent increase would be permitted to ask for up to a 25. I'm getting my words twisted. A quarter percent increase as a result of having a 1% formula allowance increase.
Madam Chair, So, for example, if we just lifted the cap, they could go back to the voters and ask for more money. Just, you know, however much they wanted. This just says that when the rest of the districts get a formula allowance, they couldn't take advantage of that because they were at the cap. So if the state gave the rest of the districts, they couldn't levy for what the rest of the districts, they could only levy for a quarter of what the rest of the districts were getting.
And Senator Bonhoeff, there are some districts that are in that situation, well as others that have in a recent referendum have put gotten voter approval for allowing that inflationary effect to go to, or that inflationary increase to go into effect automatically. So that this could mean an automatic increase if this bill passed with the 1% increase for a district, even a grandfathered district that had, in fact, gotten that approval.
Madam Chair, if they got approval for the inflationary increase to be indexed, yes. But they would have to get approval.
So is Scott Kronquist here? Brad Lindell is here? These are folks that are very interested in referendum allowances and things of that sort. So why don't you give us your perspective here?
Madam Chair and members, Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. I think Mr. Naumann laid out the referendum allowance very clearly. This would just say that it doesn't repeal the cap. It just says that the cap for the grandfather districts would go up at the same rate it goes up for non-grandfather districts. So it still has to be voter approved. It just raises the cap at the same rate. The other provision with the capital projects referendum ballot language change, that was a bill introduced by Senator Chamberlain and Senator Bonhoeff. And that, I think, is a very non-controversial change. As you mentioned, Madam Chair, it really just follows the law that's already in effect for operating referendum ballot language. Again, it still has to be voted on by the voters, but it just allows the ballot to say if you're renewing a referendum at the same rate, so it's not an increase in taxes, then the ballot would not have to say you're voting for a property tax increase, which under current law right now it does. It still makes it clear to the voters that the referendum is otherwise set to expire, but you are renewing a referendum that is set to expire. So we actually think it makes it much clearer to the voters and really is telling the truth to the voters much more clearly than the current law actually requires.
I'm sure this would be a provision that the tax committee would like to chew on. But the other another question, how many of the grandfathered, you know, the grandfathers districts were ones that, you know, we had a very progressive property tax rate structure, particularly in commercial and industrial. And so you had districts that had high commercial industrial that had no problem selling referendum because they could sell the residents who were the voters that somebody else was paying for it, even within their district. And there's been a lot of changes both in compressing that and in the era of the equity lawsuits, that there was a cap put on referendum to help control that disparity between the 5th and the 95th percentile. But some of those districts were above that cap, and those are the ones we refer to as grandfather districts. How many are still? Now, a couple times we've made adjustments to that cap when it really got to be a strain. But how many districts are left of the grandfather that are technically over the regular cap? Do you know that?
Madam Chair, members, I don't know if I know exactly. I'm guessing seven. Mr. Nauman may know. Six or seven districts
are still above that cap.
Above that cap. Now, one distinction there, though, there are many more than that that actually have the ability to have a referendum higher than that amount. Those are the districts that are eligible for sparsity. And under law, if you are a district that qualifies for sparsity revenue, the cap doesn't apply to you. So those aren't really grandfather districts, although they do have the ability to have a higher referendum. The grandfather districts are the ones that would otherwise be subject to that cap, but because of the legislation that passed, and I believe it was 1992 or 3, Mr. Lundell probably knows the answer to that, then the legislature made a decision, well, we're not going to lower you because you were at a level higher than that. We're just going to grandfather you in. And so I think it's six or seven districts that are grandfather districts.
Okay. Then I hate to admit that my brain may have gone into neutral, but if you allow the districts, rather than going to a portion of it to the whole when everybody else gets it, how is that different than lifting the cap? It's allowing them to increase at the same rate that everybody else is. But lifting the cap, would the lifting the cap actually allow them to go anywhere they wanted to?
Go to the sky.
Correct, Madam Chair. Yes, if you just repealed the cap, then a district could go for whatever amount they wanted, and if the voters approved it, then they would.
That would
get
be everybody, not just the grandfathers.
Everybody.
It would
correct.
Be everybody.
Correct, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Bono.
I now have open Dr. Peterson's testimony on this subject and what he specifically wrote. There is a small provision in current statute that limits the inflation factor for six or seven districts to just 0.25% of the increase in the formula allowance in any one year. All other districts can have an inflation factor based on the cost of living increase in any one given year. And it says that in his case, for example, Minnetonka voters have already voted on this and they approved the inflation factor. The other thing that he mentioned is there's this myth that these are high receiving districts, they were 264th among the 340 districts in revenue per pupil. So it doesn't mean that these school districts get a lot. Most of it, they just have a higher proportion of their money coming from the levy than because they don't get as much state aid.
Thank you. Mr. Lundell.
Okay, I'll start. This is the good news, bad news for Senator Bonhoff from me, and the good news is the second part of the amendment we're totally fine with. I think that that's if you're just readopting or if you're just renewing the same measure that you've had in the past, you're not increasing it, it should be, we're fine with that. The cap has been a real sore point, as you well know, Senator Olson, for Schools for Equity and Education for a long time. You know, I sympathize with Senator Bonhoff and Superintendent Peterson. I guess the problem here is that we're now seeing the gap between the 5th and 95th, the study that the department does every year with transition and just basically the referendum equity, I think, is that's going back up to almost where it was when we first put the equalization in place. Those equalization formulas have not been changed at all in the last 15 years. And so we're now at the point where the tax effort is starting again to show, especially in the metropolitan area, where people are just falling a little bit off of the equalization factor, a little bit over the equalization factor. They're paying 2-3 times as much as they are in the districts that have the heavier commercial industrial property. You're right that the compression of the rates and the moving from AMTC to referendum market value has had some compressing effect on that difference. But it's still a very real difference. And I think if you're looking in the same metropolitan market, it gets to be disadvantageous for low property wealth districts in the metropolitan area vis-a-vis districts that are less than, 15, 20 miles away. I would hope, the governor said that he's going to put together this task force to look at the formulas. I think, number one, we need to have one referendum cap. I think there needs to be a way that what's happened both times the cap has been adjusted in 2001 and then again in 2007, the grandfather districts were elevated outside of that cap adjustment, so they remained above the cap. I think there were two opportunities there in 2001 and again in 2007 to create one single cap and get everybody underneath those cap and everybody dealing then with the same set of issues. I do think that allowing districts to just continue to rise with inflation while the districts that I represent are having increasing troubles passing referenda just is something we shouldn't be doing during these tight times. I sound harsh and negative in my approach here, but I just want to keep everybody in the same boat. I want to keep everybody riding in the same boat. And when a certain set of districts can go off and say, well, we're going to pass a levy up to a gazillion dollars a kid, it just doesn't do much for the general and uniform, thorough and efficient part of the state constitution that I really work on. So with that, I'll stand.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Bonhoff.
Madam Chair and Mr. Lindell, I didn't put forward a bill that would let them go do gazillions. That would have been lifting the cap. That would have been doing just what you said, and then we wouldn't be all in the same boat. Actually, what I'm proposing puts them in the same boat. There's 6 or 7 school districts that when everybody else gets an inflationary increase, they get a quarter of the inflationary increase. I'm not saying that we should increase the disparity and give them gazillions and gazillions. I'm very sensitive to the disparity, and I don't like the disparity. I'm just saying let's treat them all the same. These 6 or 7 aren't the ones, if you look through, that are getting a lot of money. So it just so happened the way they get their money is different than everybody else. They have the same pressures, the same challenges that everybody else does, the same cuts that everybody else does. The difference is they get a quarter when everybody else gets a buck. That's all.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonhoff, my only reply to that would be Sauk Rapids Rice has no referendum. And so when inflation goes up, they don't get anything.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Lindell, they do. They get the inflationary increase. That's all I'm saying. They do. If the state gives an inflationary increase, they get it. If the state gives an inflationary increase to these districts, they get a quarter. It's no different. They get that. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Senator Bonner, if they get a quarter of the referendum allowance, they will get the quarter. They will get the state growth of funds.
Mm-mm. A quarter.
No.
They don't.
It's all related to referendum. This is all related to referendum, is it not? It's they will get the basic formula. They're not shrunk. It's that the referendum limit or allowance is based on the basic funding. They're not restricted in the basic funding, but the ability to go to the voters for a referendum is restricted.
Madam Chair, I could be confused on this. Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair and members, I apologize I missed the beginning of this conversation, but if I heard the thrust of it, the way this cap works is what we're talking about here today deals just as Mr. Kuhnquist and Mr. Lindell have identified, those districts that are in excess of the cap already, and it is what we're doing is adjusting the calculation of how much they can ask their voters for.
Yeah, so Mr. Nauman, as we were now talking about whether they are limited in what they get in state funding increase, they are not. They all get that. This is the referendum allowance limit.
Yep, Madam Chair and members, to the extent that that's the discussion, this is only about the operating referendum. It has nothing to do with other parts of general education.
Okay, thank you.
In light of all of the things that are going on here, I'm reluctant to incorporate this in the bill at this time. I think the fact that there is a funding that the administration is working on that, and there are several legislators They've conveniently scheduled all the meetings on Wednesday, all Wednesday mornings till the end of the session. So I'm not sure if how many legislators will get that were asked to sit in on it will be able to participate. But it'll be interesting to see if they can come up with recommendations that would change it. But also, we don't have a levy impact, and we do have a levy target too. Well, there's a little bit of cushion. I have a feeling that this might go beyond that, and without knowing that, I don't think we should add this at this time. So I'd appreciate if you would offer Section 3, and I think we can agree to that.
Madam Chair, I am willing to divide the amendment, and after that, I think there might be other comments on it, which if people want to, but I'm willing to do that.
Okay.
So I would divide the amendment and offer Section 3.
Okay. Any questions? Understand? We're voting on the Section 3 of the A31 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment, Section 3, is adopted. Now, Senator Bonhoff, you're going to withdraw the rest of the amendment?
Madam Chair, yes. I'll withdraw the rest of the amendment.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any further amendments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
I support the part of the amendment that Senator Bonhoff just withdrew. I'm just wondering if we could have Mr. Nauman comment on the effect to the budget of keeping that provision if it were adopted into the bill. Could you give us some counsel on
Senator Hand, I know that he hasn't had a chance to get the fiscal impact of that. The session isn't over. So it doesn't mean that there may not be another round that this could be considered in a larger, another context or larger context. But by all means, Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, Senator Hand and I were visiting privately about this, so I think I know the direction he's going. While I can't attach at this juncture an exact number to this, we do know that we would score it with a property tax increase. And because of the interactions with the property tax recognition shift, that would generate savings relative to the Senate bill as a result of early recognition of savings and then a pull down of general education. So there would actually be, relative to the Senate package,
a slight
reduction in aids associated with this. But it would come with the price of higher levies. Senator Hand, is that the direction?
I was trying to understand, Madam Chair and Mr. Nauman, I was trying to understand the workings of this, and I appreciate the Chair's desire to keep with what you have in mind, but I would like to have us contemplate this as we go forward.
Senator Hand, I will acknowledge, full disclosure, I represent four districts that I don't think all four of them would, but two or three of them would benefit from this provision. I also represent four, or parts of four, that Brad Lundell's membership agrees with. So you see, it's not a...
You're conflicted, Madam Chair.
So it would be nice if we could have agreement. If there was a way of dealing with this, and along with other formula changes, it would be a lot easier. But I'm not against further discussion of this as we go forward.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Is there any further amendments?
Senator Hand, did you have an amendment?
I do have an amendment, but I know Senator Wieger had mentioned he had one, so I'll defer to Senator Wieger.
Whichever. You played it
okay.
out.
No, Madam Chair, I have a couple, but I'll take the first one. And both of them are policy matters that have passed the Senate at least twice in earlier years. First, I'll offer the A11. And, Madam Chair, as it's being distributed, I could highlight it during that time, if that's okay. It's compulsory attendance, and right now you may drop out at age 16. This would increase that age to 18. And we've had a lot of discussion on that in the past, but it's sending a strong message that we want you to stay in school. We've been looking at a lot of other states, Wisconsin, for some guidance on policy. That seems to be in this bill in part. Wisconsin has age 18. And the majority of states are going that direction. there is a fiscal impact because the state books on failure that thousands of students aren't going to make it, but it's very costly to society, as you know, and I believe we should send that message in the year 2011 that you should stay in school until you're 18, or if you, unless you graduate prior to that.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. I think, for a little historical context, I believe this actually passed into law with a delayed implementation date, and before it was implemented, it was repealed. There is great concern on the part, and I don't know if there's anybody here representing the principals. I think Mr. Aronson is here, that have some concerns about this, and even Senator Harrington may have something to say about the subject as well. But the issue of trying to keep kids in school that don't want to, and require it, is makes it a little difficult, and there may be other ways that we can deal with trying to improve our graduation rates than just forcing a compulsory attendance age and make it disrupt, have people there that don't want to be and disrupt others, or just not come and make truancy that much harder to enforce. Okay. Mr. Aronson.
Madam Chair, I think you stated it very well.
Sorry.
And I think that Senator Wieger's heart is in the right place in terms of the policy piece, but we do an awful lot with these kids now to move them through. We think the current date works. Raising this to 18 causes some other issues for us, and we lose some flexibility with it. So we really do resist this for a lot of reasons, and we have some flexibility now. We'd like to keep it that way. We do not, and we do, we oppose this initiative. We have opposed it in the past. Under current law, I mean, we have changed the statute so that kids have to talk to counselors if they're going to drop out. We try to encourage them to stay, but I think when we had this one time, we had the principal from Buffalo came in and testified and said that we have some kids that from time to time need a semester off, that they're going to go work in the family business for a semester or whatever that case may be, or they're failing. So saying that they're going to stay in school and compel them into the failure mode doesn't work as well as we'd like it to. So we'd ask you not to pass this amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. Anybody have any further questions or discussion?
No, and Madam Chair, I just was initially inspired a few years ago when Dr. Maria Karstoffen, the superintendent in St. Paul, and she talked about how surprised she was from coming from a different state that we were at this age, and she talked about tough love, and I thought she really gave a good sermon to the committee and wish we could play that. I respect where you might be coming from. There might be students age 13 that don't want to go to school. I could have been one of them. But you know, we owe it to these students and send the right message.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yeah, I would request that the members oppose this. One of the problems we have right now in our schools is the inability to keep order. And while Senator Wieger is certainly correct, there are 10 and 11 and 12-year-olds out there that don't want to be in school, they are at an age that they can generally be controlled. You take 17 and 18-year-olds who really don't want to be there. They're physically, practically adults. And we are asking our schools, putting great demands on our schools to successfully educate children. It's very difficult to do that when you have 8% of the percentage of the children disrupting, and it seems to me that it does not make sense to make a 17 or 18-year-old sit in a seat that they don't want to be in, because, frankly, I don't think you can as a practical matter.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Question for Senator Wieger. If they did the GED, then that would count, right? Then they'd be done. So the high school equivalent test, when you say successfully complete the requirements for high school graduation, that would include the substitute test?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonhoff, that would be the intent. If we can show they're on a reasonable path for hope, and that would be at GED.
Okay.
Senator Harrington.
Madam Chair, I'm actually really of two minds of this. I, having been an SRO, a school resource officer in schools, and had to physically and literally wrestle with kids that were that 16 to 18-year-old age who frankly didn't want to be there, I certainly recognize that there are challenges to doing, compelling them to be there. But I also recognize that not having them in school puts them oftentimes in a position where we're going to compel them to do other things because they're all too often going to fall into the correctional system where we're going to be making them do things there. And so there's a part of me that says while it would be easier for the schools to not have them there, in the long run we pay and we pay mightily when we do not complete their education. And so I really am torn on this particular piece of legislation. There's a part of me that, having had the conversation with you about wanting to have kids in school longer, all-day schools and all-year schools and all-day kindergarten, that makes me think that if we were to put the right incentives and put the right curriculum in front of them, we might be able to reach some of these 17 to 18-year-olds and save ourselves a lot of grief in the long run. But I'm at this point torn as to where I would fall on this bill right now.
Thank you, Senator Harrington. I think there are obviously schools that do have high retention rates. That's one of the reasons why I think Senator Stumpf and I have been proponents of seeing that we keep some career and technical education options, because some of these kids just aren't acclimated to sitting in an academic classroom all day. And that's why you need a variety of kinds of programming in order to make that possible and have them want to be there. Because you heard from some of the folks that are a product of that and their student organizations that got stability back in their life and it challenged them and have gone on to great things. So Senator Wolf, and then I will recognize you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to comment. Obviously, ideally, we'd like to see kids stay in until they graduate. And I think it's very important that we have programs that motivate them to stay. We give them several choices of various type of school settings that will fit their needs. But as somebody who has taught in a facility where we deal with the truants, what we don't want to see is where we get these kids bungled up in the court systems and they're forced to go to school. So then they come to school to see me and we keep them for a year or two until they hit that magical age of 18 and they decided quit at that point anyway. So I would rather see us put our efforts in finding ways to motivate the kids to stay and realize that there's a purpose for them to stay and there's value in that education rather than punishing them for not staying in school. And most often it defeats the purpose trying to drag them. And literally, we do. We go and pick them up at home and drag them and bring them to school. And they may or may not choose to learn when they're sitting in a separate facility from their regular schools. I love your idea, but I would oppose this.
Ms. Salzberger.
Madam Chair and Senators, I think that you're making some excellent points, Senator Harrington, Senator Wolf, Senator Olson. I think that probably we would all agree that the best thing is to make sure that these kids stay in until age 18. I don't think anybody thinks that that's not what should happen. The problem is that, as Senator Harrington said and Senator Wolf said, sometimes it's very difficult to get these kids there. And then, Senator Olson, you hit it right, the nail on the head. Kids are different. Some kids are motivated by the vocational programs, the career and technical. And so our position is that if we are going to increase this compulsory attendance age, that we need to make sure that we have the funding and the programs for these kids to make sure that we have programs that attract them, that are interesting to them, that we have possibly a smaller class size for these individuals. I'm not here to say what the right answer is, but we know that these kids do need education, and we would like to see them there, but we do need the resources. Otherwise, I think it's an extra burden on the teachers in the classroom if we have kids in from 16 to 18 who do not want to be there and we don't have the resources for them.
And Ms. Allswiger, wouldn't you agree that we ought to be working toward that end without having to increase the compulsory attendance age? I mean, we should do that. so that they're there by choice and wanting to learn.
Yeah, you're right, Madam Chair, and I think by having the programs such as the career and technical and the secondary vocational programs, which, you know, frankly are more expensive, but there is value to these kids that sometimes slip through the cracks because they're not the four-year college types. They're not great at the paper-pencil testing type program. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. We've got an estimate that there is probably a minimum of $1 million cost in aid to this amendment, and about $100,000 in levy that would be connected with it, which would throw our bills quite.
I'll just close, Madam Chair. I thank you for sharing thoughts and the diminished earnings for not completing that education is $250,000 annually for that person. Senator Harrington said these persons are almost inevitably at risk of entering the social service or correctional system. You can almost book that. But thank you very much for hearing it.
Senator Nelson, are you?
Yes.
Are you pulling it?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
But I'm not asking for a roll call either.
Okay. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe this is a very well-intended bill. As someone who has worked with youth in my community, I certainly talked to my high school about, quite frankly, 16-year-olds that were consistently absent. And, of course, their reply was, we do not have the resources to make them come. And even if they come, we can't make them participate and learn. And so from my experience in my district, while this is very well intended, I think it would have negative consequences.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to also express my appreciation for Senator Wieger. I, like Senator Harrington, been a little bit conflicted on this. I think a couple of years ago I was actually on a bill that you had similar to this, asking for the higher age. But I have a slight change of heart, and actually I flirted with the idea of lowering the compulsory school age for the very reason that we're talking about, is that I think we sometimes need to find ways to make sure kids in school want to be in school and deal with that as a problem first. But I also want to go on record, and I don't know if Ms. Alzweiger is still here, but I agree with her, and I just want her to know that. that we do agree on things, and so we don't have to sit next to each other and argue about everything. I just want to point that out. So thank you.
Ms. Kelleher, you looked like you were wanting to say something, and I don't want to ignore you.
Chairman and members, my name is Grace Kelleher, and I work for the Minnesota School Boards Association.
But can you adjust the mic? I'm not hearing it as well here, so I don't know if that's my problem or if it's.
Do you hear me now, Madam Chairman?
A little bit better.
Better now?
Maybe it's this. Maybe I'm having trouble with this. Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chairman, just as we reviewed the bill, if you turn over to 2.1, that definition of habitually truant would change and the ages would change, and I would think that would make a call for the bill to make a stop to the judiciary going forward, since we're actually impacting statutes that have truancy applications.
Thank you. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No. Did I hear? Say that
pretty
again.
Pretty close. No.
If my hearing is serving me right, I don't believe the amendment did prevail. So, are there any further amendments? Senator Harrington.
Madam Chair, I'd like to offer the A20 amendment.
A20.
As they're passing that out, I'll explain it. The A20 amendment, I unfortunately was not here on the day that the hearing was held on integration aid. I sent a letter at that time voicing my unhappiness with that particular piece of legislation. I was at a community meeting last night over on Rice Street, and it was never more abundantly clear than last night why the integration aid is an important piece for the schools. It's not necessarily directly tied to academic achievement, although I think it certainly does speak to the soft skills that the business community and the Chamber of Commerce want to see. but it really speaks to a higher social order that Brown v. Board of Education speaks to. The reason it came to me so clearly last night partly was because the education commissioner was there, and she talked about turning the clock back on 60 years of progress, and that while we have certainly not achieved a fully integrated society, you shouldn't just throw out 60 years of work because of a financial matter. But beyond the commissioner's words, what really struck me was the audience that I was there with. While many school districts have a variety of different people from different places, the St. Paul School District, I think, is and perhaps Minneapolis and maybe Anoka, I'm not quite sure, but are, I think, a little more challenged because when we talk about integration, it's not simply about black and white anymore. It's not simply about Latinos being integrated into schools. It's about well in excess of 120 different languages being spoken in St. Paul schools. It's about young people coming from countries where there was no formal education system or where the chaos of war has really disrupted their any chance of having a formal education. Last night I had people in burkas. I had young Hmongs who had just come here from the camps and from California. I had Eritreans. I had Oromos. I had Nigerians. I had Liberians. I had Latinos from a variety of different places, all in one small little library room to have a conversation about their education and about their children and about their and in some cases about their own education because we had young people in that room. Taking the integration aid will really set St. Paul schools back substantially. And I really do appreciate the fact that it's phased in, that on the first year that it doesn't, that it's not taken away. But I don't know that St. Paul schools can operate in a climate with 120 different languages, with an increasingly diverse population that needs to be integrated socially as well as academically without integration aid. Once again, I really applaud the push to put more funding into the literacy piece. But I think the integration aid was really meant to do more than literacy. I think it was meant to be both a good social education as well as a literate education. And so my bill would ask to take the integration aid and put it back in as it was in the original in the governor's bill.
Thank you for that explanation. Is there any discussion or questions on that amendment?
Roll call.
Senator Chamberlain.
I appreciate the conversations about this, obviously. It's an important piece. But I keep coming back to outcomes. If the integration aid is there to improve the condition of the students, that certainly hasn't been the case. And that's what we're looking at is outcomes. If this proved that the kids were graduating, the achievement gap was closing, I'd say raise taxes. But it's not. It hasn't worked. We're just offering a different approach to get these kids graduated, get them reading. What we've been doing clearly has not achieved our goals. And we simply have to try something different. And we can't keep doing the same thing. Change here could give them a chance. But to continue doing what we're doing certainly has not worked.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to speak in support of what Senator Harrington's saying. I chaired an integration task force during the session, and there we learned that it was so complicated and there was so much going on in the community that we couldn't get it done in a session, and so we never did come forward with a recommendation. And then, as you've all heard, Commissioner Segrin put together a task force over the summer, and she actually put me on it, but it did not work for me to participate in it. So but those who did work on it, they did so recognizing that the program we have now does not have oversight. It is not oriented around achievement, and the plans are not followed up. There is so much wrong with this program, and we have just kind of pushed it year after year after year. And so I do think we need to look at every dollar we spend towards closing the achievement gap,
But I'm concerned that if we just say it's gone and in place of it is the literacy, which I want the literacy, and I think we should keep that. I'm concerned that it's like saying that we don't understand that there are issues based on race and ethnicity and country of origin, and so I'm afraid it sends a signal to that community that we don't care. And I know we do care, but I'm concerned that our language speaks louder in the absence than our actions affirmatively. And so I know that voting for this puts the bill out of balance, and so it can't really pass, but I'm going to support Senator Harrington's amendment as a communication of my belief that we need to now more than ever embrace our differences with a focus on achievement, no matter what. And I did not like that integration was not tied to achievement. So I'll be first one to say that.
Well, thank you. Well, Senator Harrington, you probably have the most integrated community there is when you have 120 different languages and cultures there. And the most essential part of it is the ability to communicate with both the language and the reading. And I think that's why that's very, very critical. But we, Senator Bonner, thank you for your comments, because that's what's been happening. It's been going on for years. The legislative auditor came up and thanked me for giving some attention to this issue, because it was, 2005 when the audit came out, which was very, very condemning of what was going on and the very points that you brought out. And we just don't seem to come to grips with it. There's some that say just get rid of it. I didn't feel comfortable at that at all. By leaving it in a year and giving fair warning and then setting that direction that we wanted to do. Now, maybe it's going to be too fast. And we're not done with this year yet, and we're not done with next year yet. But I hope that we will keep those kind of goals in mind, and I would appreciate you leaving this in place for now, because I'm not sure, but I think the other body may have been more aggressive in this than what we are. And I don't want to see a devastating action in affecting the education of our core city people as well. But we do have more to do, and I'm not. This may seem to be a bit simplistic or putting too much pressure on, but kicking the can down the road doesn't do it either.
And Madam Chair, perhaps even something as simple as language that would be literacy-based integration intervention, or just something where a tie from the past to the future that doesn't leave people with the misperception that we don't care. Because that's what I'm hearing. I'm actually hearing people say in my districts and around where I've been, oh, they don't even care about this. And I think that we do care, and the money's there to prove it, but perhaps the language, and I'm not saying we have to do it here, but if you just might consider that, if there's some way, because the fact is there was a bill to take the two cities or the three cities of the first class down to where everybody else is monetarily, and essentially that's what happened with an eye towards achievement using the lens of literacy, right?
Yeah, well, actually it went all the way across the board for mm-hmm. everybody
yeah.
on it, but it delayed it a full year and leaving it just as it is. Mm-hmm. Senator Harrington.
Madam Chair, I appreciate all of the comments, and to some extent in response, I think you are correct, as Senator Chamberlain, in terms of that it may not, the integration aid has not been tied to academic achievement. I really don't have any argument that would be cogent or persuasive on that. What I would say is it may be that we've been measuring the wrong thing, though, that the integration aid was really meant to redress social ills beyond the school, that we were starting the school to correct some social ills that the society as a whole had played out in segregated cities, segregated neighborhoods, and segregated schools, and that the DSEG and the integration aid really was meant to correct those social ills, and we perhaps have not been measuring the right thing in that regard. I think it's important to note that this would reinstate the integration rule, which I think is an important thing for us to say that we are still for in a time when communities oftentimes are isolated and when conflicts between communities based on ethnicity, race, and sometimes their own national origin have not gone away. Those problems still exist today. I don't think they exist to the extent that they did when Brown v. Board of Education happened. So I think we have made progress, but we have new challenges. That 120 languages comes with additional challenges that the schools are forced to meet. And so I would ask for support for my bill.
Senator Reeder.
Yes, Madam Chair, just to briefly speak in support and strong support of it. I would like to see, you know, some improvements, as we all do for everything, but we talk about, you know, reading and you know, the math, the writing, the three R's, but perhaps the most important of the R's just growing up is respect and the self-esteem, one's respecting themselves and respecting their neighbors. And you look at problems in neighborhoods and communities and states in the world. This teaches respect, the intercultural relations. And there may not be a test that measures it, but I'm convinced it's going the wrong direction to go the route that we're going at this point. I respectfully submit that.
Senator Wieger, you know, I know that part of the challenge and the difficulty we've had and the schools have had is, as Senator Harrington, if education is supposed to solve the social ills, that's a heavy burden to put on it. But I still go back, on the other hand, is that good teachers, good teaching is what establishes both the self-esteem and the self-respect and teaching other children, and they do that in the climate that they create in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And I have fond memories of my mother's capability of that. She just had a way with her in elevating those that came that had differences to the point that everybody realized that they were valued if they respected one another and not picking on or bullying or any of the sort. And I learned a lot from her in that, and that's where our teachers are so key in creating that climate for whoever is in their classroom. And it goes with some of the professional development that is needed and I think provided in many of these school districts to create that kind of environment.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, part of, I think, what Senator Harrington is addressing with respect to how we want to measure the outcome of this investment, I think is important. I think how you want to move in a direction where we really look at how do we invest these dollars and how do we measure outcomes. I think that's very important. I think what has happened with this move, however, Senator, is that in a way we're kind of taking these dollars to initiate a project about reading that I think is important. And you know, I'm very careful with how I say this because I really believe that the idea of creating this reading initiative is a very, very good one. And I think we ought to do it. Yet, we're taking this little bit of money, and I would like to see really how much money you're going to get in order to really put in place this reading initiative. I mean, it's so little that I have a hard time really thinking that it's going to be effective. And so, you know, we're transitioning from one place to another without really knowing what are we doing, why are we funding this. And in a way, you know, moving this money out of districts a year is a very short period of time. Minneapolis is really going to have to, and St. Paul, all you know, the districts that are receiving this funding right now, are going to have to really think very carefully about what to do with the magnet schools that they have and all of these programs, and it's going to take over a year to do it. So, you know, $66 million for all the districts to initiate the reading initiative that you want is simply not enough. But we're doing, I think, tremendous damage to a lot of programs that are working right now that, in fact, we told them a year ago that they should move in a different direction. And now we're telling them, yeah, you're moving in that direction, but we're defunding you. And so I think, Madam Chair, is how we go about this, too, that to me, it doesn't seem appropriate right now. If you want to give the districts more time, and then if you want to change the policy and say that you really want to measure outcomes, that what you really want to do with integration is something different, I think that you definitely can. You're a senator and you're a chair, and we can do that. But I don't think that right now, with this bill, we're accomplishing that. You're simply, you know, telling these districts that you're going to take the funding and just do something else, and we're not quite sure how that's going to work.
So is there further discussion? A roll call has been requested. A roll call granted. Secretary will take the roll.
Madam Chair?
No.
Senator Bonoff?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Hahn?
No.
Senator Harrington?
Yes.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Nino?
No.
Senator Scheid? Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf? Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres-Ray?
Yes.
Senator Uyghur?
Yes.
Senator Wolf?
No.
There being 5 in favor and 10 opposed, the amendment does not prevail. Are there further amendments?
Go ahead, Dave.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A13 amendment. And while, Madam Chair, while Ms. McQuay
yes,
is...
go ahead and explain.
I'll talk a little bit about this amendment. A couple of weeks ago in the committee, I brought a bill that dealt with immediate discharge that has been incorporated into the bill, Section 10 on page 34, Section 10 of Article 2. And at that time, there was I had been given a proposed amendment to my bill from the Association of School Administrators and had not had a chance to meet with them. They have subsequent to are passing that bill, come to me with some changes in language that they would like to insert, and I agreed to bring this amendment. And I guess if Mr. Kite is available, I'd like to invite him to come to the table and talk about the proposed change. And I am not certain if this represents agreement or consensus or not, and I'd like to find out more. So perhaps he can respond to that. What it does essentially is it deletes the whole section and replaces it with what the amendment is. But it really pertains to the part of the language in Section 10, lines 3423 to 3429. It's restating that language and doing some things to amend it. And I'd like to invite Mr. Kite, if he would, to talk about this and what we're doing it for.
Mr. Kite.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. There are two types of discharge in the law for our professional employees. One is a process that you may discharge somebody at the end of the year for inefficiency or whatever. There's a second portion on that it addresses immediate discharge, and this is usually happens when somebody has done something significantly wrong within the school. without being able to pin an exact number down, I would say, to my knowledge, maybe 25 times during a school year, we run into a situation where somebody has been stealing, significantly sexually inappropriate, or something along those lines, where we just feel this person needs to be no longer working in the school. Typically, what a school district does right now is they put the person on, the individual, on paid leave. The individual, their representatives, and we, the school district, pretty much know that this person is going to be dismissed. But the process right now is one that if you drag it out long enough, we end up paying the individual for about 6 to 9 months' salary before we get to the end of the process. Now, we're not suggesting that a person shouldn't receive due process if they request it. But what we are suggesting in this bill is that the district would only place the person on paid leave for 30 days. After that, the person would be on unpaid leave. If it turns out that the person isn't dismissed, the school district would owe them that back pay, so they would be made whole. But it is a way, we believe, that would move these processes on a lot faster. I think right now, often, the process itself is simply used as a way of creating sort of a separation pay that we don't really think should be coming. We have a lot of questions in our school districts by citizens who say, why is this person still being paid? Now, I'm also going to say, and this is sharing some of our own dirty laundry, this doesn't only pertain to teachers or occasionally to other administrators. We actually had a situation with one of our superintendents this last year where an individual did something that disgusted everybody in our profession and then attempted to be on paid leave for a long period of time. I actually was kind of proud of our association. We just said, we are not going to do this, and said, you have to leave. But sometimes that gets dragged out, and this particular amendment tries to address that. We, again, I want to say, are not trying to take people's due process away. We're not trying to dismiss people unfairly. But in these unfortunate circumstances, we think that paying the person for 30 days and then not paying them after that will help to have everybody try to bring these processes to a conclusion more quickly. I would stand for questions if you'd like.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Kite. I think the original bill that I brought was at the request or in consultation with the School Board Association. Is this language acceptable? I mean, is this something that has been worked out between you and the school boards, or are they at odds with this? And I don't know if they want to come up and talk about it, but does this represent some consensus on this issue?
I can't really speak for the School Board Association. I think we are all together on this, but they certainly could speak for themselves if it's different than that.
Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I work for the Minnesota School Boards Association. We have been participating along with former Superintendent Kite on this going forward. And certainly we've seen this as basically a felony teacher bill we've had over the years, trying to deal with situations where you have an employee who's done something rather egregious, and you're putting them on paid leave. Certainly there are other models that do this and allow this, and this can be very divisive for your community and as a board member, and we would really appreciate this change.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
And Madam Chair, so I take it you're okay with the language. I just want to be clear that we're not at odds here.
Madam Chairman.
Ms. Keller.
Senator Hahn, yes, we are not at odds at this language at all.
And Madam Chair, just one other comment. Perhaps this was done, but I read in the paper recently that Mr. Kite is going to be changing his position with respect to the Association of School Administrators, and if that's true, I just wanted to say I appreciate your working with you over the years, and just wish you well in your future endeavors.
Senator Hahn, Chair, members, thank you very much for that. I'm not actually retiring until October 1st. They've named my replacement, and that person is going to start on the 1st of July. We'll have a little overlap. And then I'm hoping that I'll at least have a few other things to do after that, because my spouse is very nervous about me hanging around 7 days a week in our house. Thank you.
Thank you. I detected that there's a couple other people that might want to say something on this subject, and be happy to allow you to do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Association. This language directly affects us. This is a major, major change. And I think, with all due respect, Dr. Kite gave you only half of this. And you know, we have a statute that has been in effect for a very long time. Discharges in districts are difficult sorts of things. But if you pass this, then when you have the cases that aren't the egregious cases that he talks about, the district can basically look at people and say, listen, we're gonna put you out, and we're going to drag our feet in proceeding with this hearing, and so you're not going to be paid. And it's no skin off our nose, but you're going to be unable to pay your mortgage. You're going to be unable to buy groceries because we're not going to pay you. These cases do take a lot of time. Very rarely does it have anything to do with the employee. It has a lot to do with the lawyers that are handling them and the timelines here, because there are no timelines within which these are supposed to be handled. We've had some discussions. I know Education Minnesota lawyers have said, let's talk about some timelines, and that we certainly could put those in a reasonable fashion and I think in a collaborative sort of fashion. But this is a very significant change. And just to give you an example, I've handled discharge cases that aren't significant deals, you know, where the question is whether or not somebody inappropriately used their cell phone. These are highly politicized deals in the districts themselves, and boards may think that they want to move to discharge sometimes. We have an independent arbitrator who says this isn't a discharge case, but that person would have to sit out there and not be paid for 6 months. They won't make it. They won't make it. I know that Ms. Kelleher has said a couple of times in the bargaining context about rebalancing the bargaining table. And if you want to talk about balancing, Mr. Kite says he's not interested in really changing the due process piece. This fundamentally changes the due process pieces. And so we really would urge you not to do this. And finally, I would say, we talk about data-driven decisions. What you've heard now with an amendment is anecdotal. If you think this is the major problem that Mr. Kite's talked about, let's study it. Let's have some people look at it. Let's find out how many cases there actually are that would make you or that would justify doing this significant change, because this is a very significant change. And so we'd really urge you to set this aside, talk about it for another day. It's worth talking about, to be sure, but there should be some reasonable deadlines in here rather than making this without pay, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Ms. Altrager.
Madam Chair.
Pardon me? Oh, Senator Seben, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I just had a clarifying question. Mr. Kite said that this would apply to superintendents, and I was wondering from Senator Hahn or perhaps council if that's the case, because it seems like the way it looks to me, it just applies to teachers. But is there something I'm missing?
Madam Chair, members, I need to check the statute book, but it probably come down to the definition of teachers for this section of law.
Thank you. Listen to testimony while she's getting the answer to that, Senator Seben. Ms. Altrager.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Altrager, Education Minnesota, and I won't repeat what Mr. Aronson has just said. We would agree with all of the points that he made. I would just remind you that there are situations where teachers are put into situations that they did not expect. For instance, the teacher who gave a grade to a student, and the student was so upset that they planted drugs in her briefcase. And she was put on paid leave. She went through a horrendous struggle while her name was brought through the mud in the local community. And in this situation, it was determined that the student had purposely planted this in her briefcase to get back at the teacher. So that's another anecdote for you to listen to. And I urge you, excuse me, to set this aside and have a thorough conversation about this, the number of cases. In addition to this teacher having to deal with these charges, it is, as Mr. Aronson said, you don't have the money for your mortgage, health insurance, to take care of your kids. So we would urge you to set this aside and not adopt this amendment. And we are more than willing, as Mr. Aronson said, to talk about the timelines and such to make this workable.
Ms. Yonkers, do you have an answer for Senator Sieben?
Yes, Madam Chair and members, in 122A40, there's a definition of teacher in Subdivision 1, and it's a broad definition including principals and supervisors, but then it excludes superintendents. It says a superintendent is a teacher only for the purposes of Subdivision 3 and 19, and this is Subdivision 13, so a superintendent would not be included in the Subdivision 13 that's...
Okay, thank you, Ms. Yonkers. Mr. Kite?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Anne-Marie is right on that. At the same time, there's a model contract developed between the School Board Association and our association that covers superintendents. And within that language, that model contract, it brings forward exactly the same language so that superintendents during the term of their contract, the 3-year term of their contract, would be covered by the same exact same language. And the only difference being is that for superintendents, every 3 years the board can make a decision if they want to keep them or not anyway. But during the term of the contract, if they did something that was egregious, that deserved immediate discharge, they would go through the same process.
Senator Bonoff?
Madam Chair, Mr. Kite, I don't really appreciate that the way you gave your testimony was very compelling, and then to understand, and it sounds like you actually knew that it didn't apply to superintendents. I figured that you were going to say, oh, you weren't aware. But so that, I was a little bit surprised by that.
Well, I think he said that superintendents have, I saw that having done that on their own volition, but I didn't understand the contract issue either.
Yeah. In the continuing contract law or the tenure law, depending if you're talking about cities first class or all the other cities, specifically when we use the word teacher, it applies to teachers and principals. So what we have in the contracts of superintendents is we've taken that very same language and placed it into all superintendents' contracts so that they're not covered by statute, but they're all covered by the same language in their contracts.
So, Mr. Kite, do you reference it by location so that if the change was made here, it would affect the contract? Or is it spelled out in those contracts that you would be limited? Are they limited now to 30 days beyond that time of their duty?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if you make this change, that then will apply to superintendent's contracts as well. Even though the statute doesn't apply, the language within superintendent's contracts brings this language into those contracts.
Madam Chair, I was just wondering, is it your intention to have a policy bill after this?
Well, I believe the House is working on a policy bill, and we have other policy issues. We're going to continue to work on those. And while there is a provision, there is some policy in this bill, it was never meant to encompass all policy that we might want to deal with. And I think there is a provision related to this, which is what the basis of Senator Hand's offering this amendment. I don't know.
Madam Chair, as a follow-up to that, it just seems this is more complicated than at first blush, and that it would be great if we didn't have to vote on this so that we could take the time to go back to our districts and find out, because we haven't vetted this particular thing and have it be part of the next policy discussion.
Senator Hand, I'll let you respond, but Senator...
Well, Madam Chair, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the way the bill is written and incorporated into the way that this my bill that was adopted is incorporated into the omnibus bill, that whole section is deleted, which would suggest that there would have, under the language that's in the bill right now, no hearing at all. And it seems to me that this would reinstate the hearing, whereas in the bill as it is, there's no hearing at all. It's immediate discharge. No hearing, nothing. So I appreciate the concern, but it would seem to me that this would be a step in the direction that we're hearing we should take, rather than have the bill as it's written be adopted.
Counsel, could you address the comment that Senator Hahn?
Madam Chair and members, Council looks into this a little more. Senator Hahn does point to lines 34, page 34, lines 23 to 29 of the bill. This entire section 10, the way the amendment was constructed was to actually delete the section and then reinsert the section because there was no way to actually engross the changes that Senator Hahn was requesting in his amendment without just simply replacing the section. So under the current language that's in the bill, the language stating that prior to discharging a teacher under this paragraph, the board must notify the teacher in writing, that entire language is stricken. So what this amendment would do would reinstate that language and then add some clarifying language to that procedure.
Madam Chair, but I think the bill doesn't strike the hearing procedure, and that's what Senator Hahn's question was. I don't think this changes that piece of it.
They can still hear it.
That was my understanding. Yeah. I apologize.
Thank you. I think Senator Thompson, you had your.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Add some light to this.
One comment and then a question for Ms. Allswagger. The comment is, I believe Mr. Aronson kind of left me with the impression that this could be applied to a relatively minor incident. That's not the case. I got the statute book. You can look and see what it applies to, and then there's some specific language in the bill we have. And a question for Ms. Allswagger. Admittedly, everybody in this room would agree that if a teacher or any other employee in a district is framed, I mean literally someone plants drugs, that's a terribly unjust situation. But, you know, you can't legislate to the one in 10,000. You have to legislate to the majority of the cases, and you would certainly agree that a situation in which a teacher is framed or a circumstance like that is, you know, to put it in statistical terms, three standard deviations beyond the mean. I mean, that's really a rare circumstance, right?
Ms. Allswagger.
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, yeah, I think that might be the case. However, we should assume that everybody is innocent first. And what this is doing is assuming that someone is guilty, I believe. I think that just the nature of the questions that we have here, the different understandings that we have about this language, warrants a full hearing or at least a lengthy discussion about this provision. This has been offered similar language as a separate bill a few years ago. And so I think that it would be wise to set it aside so we can thoroughly discuss it and make sure that you and all of us understand what we would be passing.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Hahn.
Well, and again, I just want to point out that the language as it's been adopted into this omnibus bill, what it says is that, as I understand it, we've stricken a paragraph that provides that the board would notify the teacher in writing. So as the bill as it is today, the board would no longer have to do that, no longer notify the teacher in writing or state its ground for the dismissal. And it does not provide for that the teacher may make a request, and that it says here that it shall be granted. It says it takes that out. So as the bill is in the, as this section is in the omnibus bill, that whole section of current law goes away. What the amendment does is reinstate that with some provisions that I think are, as we've been hearing the discussion, reasonable or maybe not, according to your judgment, but it does put back into the law the idea that the board should notify the teacher in writing, say what the grounds are, give them an opportunity for a hearing, grant that hearing. But it does require that the compensation that the board would make would be limited to 30 days. And I understand that there is a dispute about whether that's long enough, and maybe as a compromise we could say 60 days or something. But I would argue to your point, if you're objecting to the amendment, then you must object to the language in the bill even more.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Varenton.
To that point, this language came out of Senate File 747, and part of it is that all of 747 didn't end up in here. And so the language that Senator Hahn is referring to was stricken in one section in 747, but it was moved to another, so it wasn't deleted in 747. And so now when it comes here and all of the 747 didn't get incorporated here, I think Senator Hahn may be right, as I'm trying to read this on the fly, that when we didn't pick up the other section that moved the language that he's talking about, then maybe that was lost in the translation here. The hearing provision is what I was talking about, is people still get arbitration under the bill as it's written. So it's not like this reinstates a hearing procedure. The hearing procedure is still here. I mean, it's in subdivision 15, and it talks about hearing and determination by an arbitrator. I might say the hearings are called Loudermill hearings. You're entitled to a pre-termination meeting as a matter of constitutional law to know what the charges are that are against you. If it's not written in the document here, employees still have that right under the Loudermill case and would have Loudermill hearings. So I mean that's kind of a technical point. But there still is arbitration, at least as I read it. And I think that confusion came because that provision, while it was stricken in one spot, it was moved to a different section of the statutes. 747 in part was, as I understand it, a construct by the School Board Association staff saying we'd like to recodify a bit of 122A40 as well, and that's where that happened. That bill did not propose deleting the notice of what the hearing of what the charges were.
But Madam Chair, and to Senator Hahn's Madam Chair,
Senator Bonhoeffer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Senator Hahn's point, he is right. He put back, he reinstated these requirements to let a teacher know in writing, to do these things that really are very important, and I even just heard him, you know, offer to change 30 to 60, but I think we would be remiss not to do this. I think we would be hurting you and teachers were we not to adopt Senator Hahn's amendment.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Hahn,
just to Mr. Nauman has pointed out, and I, for clarification, and I did not notice the, on page 30 of the omnibus bill, there is that language in there.
Oh,
okay.
So you are right, and I did not see that in the section that we were looking at. So I don't want Senator Bonhoeff to vote for my bill under false or this amendment under false premises. So there is it is in the I just it's not in this same section. It's in a prior piece of the omnibus bill. So this does modify those terms that are in there. So that's what it does. So. So you may oppose the bill in good conscience, Senator Bonhoeffer, if you wish.
Thank you. So, Senator Bonhoeffer, you don't want to try to improve it by making it 60 days, then.
Madam Chair, I would offer a verbal amendment.
Oral amendment,
thank you, to Senator Hahn's amendment to change the 30 to 60, because I suspect Senator Hahn's is going to pass. So I would do that. I would offer to change it to 60.
And, Madam Chair, I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
All in favor of Senator Bonhoeffer's amendment to change 30 to 60 on line 1?
And, Madam Chair, that also would have to be.
I
think that would also have to apply to line 32 as well. And maybe Mr. Nauman can, or counsel can correct me, but I think it would.
Yes, I believe. Wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yes. So on line on 1.32, change 30 to 60 as well.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, before, I guess vote on that first. That's
okay.
Fine.
All in favor of those oral changes, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, then follow up for counsel question. I would like some clarification if what Mr. Kite said is in fact law, or, you know, is that a sufficient explanation that, in fact, superintendents, were this to pass, would be held to the same standard?
Ms. Junker.
Madam Chair, members, I believe
It's how their contracts are. So if their contracts incorporate the law, then yes. But if they don't, they don't have to incorporate the law. They only have to because they agreed to in their contract.
So the school board association should pay attention to that and assure that it's in their contract.
Madam Chair, and Senator, every single superintendent's contract in the state of Minnesota has that language in it.
Right now. Madam Chair.
Senator Stephen.
If it's not difficult, and I think that this is still something that we should discuss at a later time because there are larger implications, and I'd like to see more data on the incidence of the need for this. But while I appreciate Mr. Kite's comments, I do think that right now every superintendent contract may have that language, but I think that we should still, if this were to move forward, add superintendent to the definition so that we're sure that it's also in state statute that that would happen in the future, so it wouldn't become an issue for a contract negotiation.
So is there further discussion? Or
Madam Chair, before you vote on
this, this is the beginning of the process. It's not the end.
Madam Chair, before you vote on this, just to tell you what we're thinking about on this. The process is too long on these discharge cases.
Mr. Aaron, I did hear that, too, and I
Senator
think
that,
I don't know if there's a way of addressing that, but maybe that's something, as if this stays in here for a while, or I don't know what the dialogue will be between.
One suggestion I just wanted to put out there for now as this happens. If you put something in here that said the hearing must be scheduled within 20 days of the board's action, that might move this along a lot better. And maybe you could move with the 60 days to 90 or something in there. But to require that the hearing be held in a particular time period makes a lot of this go away.
Yeah.
And I think those are the things we're talking about that we'd like to talk about on this.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I think if we're all aware of that, Senator Stephen.
Well, Madam Chair, I didn't see any. I'd like to move language with council's help to ensure that this also includes superintendents in their future contracts.
While you're working on that, do you want to look at that idea of the scheduling of the hearing? I think that's probably even more critical at this point.
I agree.
Yes. Thank you. Let us, I'm going to respond to Mr. Nauman's suggestion. We're going to set this amendment aside. If you would withdraw it for the moment and let them work on that and see if we can finish up some of the other things. And while we're in the process of setting that aside, and thank you all,
thank you,
working on that, I think we should just take a moment to recognize that we've got a special birthday among us here today. She's kind of hiding behind a pillar here, but Jerry Wenzel's birthday.
Oh, what a way to spend my birthday.
And I think happy. We ought to wish her happy birthday. She says she's 39 and holding, and I say she's holding well. So that's Senator Stump's L.A., for those of you who don't know that, but has been a fixture in the Education Committee and one that we all regard with great fondness. So, Senator Harrington?
Two things. One, I was reminded this morning by President Fischbach that demonstrations were not appropriate, and I'm just wondering, are the rules different here?
The president controls it in the Senate, but the chair controls it in the committee.
We bow to your superior control in this case. Yeah. So.
The president could have called, say, a brief recess just to acknowledge that and clear from it, and then go back into business. But while we're actually in session, the rules don't allow for those kinds of acknowledgments. Oh, is it, Senator Stephen? It's your birthday too.
Yeah.
Somebody just leaked that information. Okay.
Happy birthday.
And I won't even. I wouldn't even touch the age issue on that one.
Yay!
Happy birthday. So, well, very good.
How are you getting birthday?
Well, they're working on that. Is there another amendment that somebody would like to offer? Senator Reeder.
Madam Chair, I offer the A8. And if I may, as it's being distributed, it's a topic you're familiar with. It's on bullying. And we have passed this twice in the Senate and in the House, previous sessions. It would require, it would be a mandate for school boards to develop a policy addressing the prohibition of harassment, bullying, intimidation, and violence. And there's a lot of work that's been done on this. We've had hours of discussion in the past. I think you know where you might weigh in on this. And I would just point out there's been tragic suicide in Anoka Hennepin, very recently something in Minneapolis. It's an ongoing problem, not only in our districts, our state, throughout our country. And I'm sure I'd ask for a roll call vote.
So is there any discussion? Senator Thompson.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm always amused by these kinds of laws. We have rules against beating people up. We have rules against violence. And it shouldn't matter the race, the gender, the national orientation, the grade point average of anyone. And I will quote a teacher that both of my kids have had, who is also the Lakeville South football coach, who says, I have two rules, be nice and don't be stupid. And that pretty much covers it. And so I think to create complex legislation to kind of codify rules that I would think common sense would dictate in any school, I would urge not expanding the statute books over something like that.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. Senator Bonhoff.
Senator Thompson, Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, I don't think it's amusing. I think it is very serious, and I think we give school districts the direction to say, for example, now we've got electronic forms requiring internet use. There is a whole type of bullying that never existed before because of the changing complexion of our students and what's now available. If you have ever been bullied, either by internet or whatever, it's a horrible thing. Actually, the Attorney General helped shut down a site at George Washington University when my daughter was sexually harassed on the internet. And it is a terrible thing. And it was difficult because of what was on the books and what was considered harassment, not harassment. And I think that anything we can do to put some teeth into this to protect our children is important. I'm a co-author on that bill, and so I do support it. And we probably all do know where we stand, but I just didn't want this to not be supported.
Madam Chair.
So, Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Thompson, I don't know if you remember, but we've had a few cases of suicide, children that have committed suicide because they have been harassed because of their sexual orientation. I am not sure that the people that were the other kids that were harassing these kids actually were stupid. I don't know. But this is a very serious matter. We have had a series of suicides. And I think, in fact, Senator Thompson, this is the reason this bill was put in place. And we talk extensively about this during the last couple of years. I wish that we could be as smart as you want us to be, and that we could pass that message to kids, say, just be smart. I wish that it would take that. But we don't live in a society where we can just tell our kids, be smart, and so don't bully kids, because that's just not a good thing. So I hope that, you know, we're able to bring those statistics back to the committee, because this is a very serious issue. Madam Chair, I just happen to know a lot of families that were impacted, that have been impacted. I happen to represent a number of families number of kids whose parents are lesbian women, gay men, and they, you know, they are going through some serious, they face some serious challenges in the schools, and I wish that we could really look at these more seriously and understand the impact. And there is really no, there is no fiscal impact on this bill. This is just good policy. It's not going to impact the way we do education or anything. This is setting a message. This is sending a message to our schools, to our kids, to our society. And I really, why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we?
I think Ms. Kelleher would like to address this. I know that the School Board Association has been active. I would point out that this amendment, there's a repealer in it on page 3, line 20. And that what that repeals is the statement, this is the heading, a school board policy prohibiting intimidation and bullying. Each school board shall adopt a written policy prohibiting intimidation and bullying of any student. The policy shall address intimidation and bullying in all forms, including but not limited to electronic forms and forms involving internet use. That is being repealed. Mr. Kelleher.
Madam Chairman and members, this is something we take very seriously at the School Boards Association and something we've been working on passionately the last 5 years. We started out with the Attorney General here in Minnesota trying to redo our policy to reflect what was really happening around the state and protect kids. And part of the problem is technology is growing so quickly that actually the law hasn't grown as quickly, and it's made it a little difficult that way, though we continue to push the bounds as far as we can and work closely with the Attorney General to try and make sure our policies reflect every case that's been decided and any clarity the law might bring to us. Also, we just made a big update to our policy in, I believe it was December, where we encouraged everybody to recognize the Minnesota Human Rights Act in their policy specifically. And the problem with the language you see here isn't its right or wrongness, but that it is more expansive than the Human Rights Act is now. So when children went on to college or they went on to employment, they'd almost have a different set of rules. And I encourage you, if you feel strongly that this is the way to go, we really do need to amend the Human Rights Act to reflect all these classes. So it's not just K-12. It is business, it's employment, it's higher education. And though this would be a significant change, we really need to see it throughout society, and schools and communities need to address this together. And I encourage you to not think so small here, and let's think bigger if this is the way the committee would like to work.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. You know, I've reflected on this in the past, and what we put in there and whatever detail we put in there, I don't think is necessarily going to change the behavior, unfortunately, because everybody has differences. And if we try to focus on the differences, it never ends. The issue is at the core of one's character and respect for another human being and respect for life. And that's what we ought to be working to inculcate and not accept any kind of behavior that has any that can be offensive or be negative to any other person. I don't care. You could write labels on page after page after page, but if that's where the focus is, rather than on the behavior, I don't think we're ever going to get to the bottom and change the behavior. And it isn't that I in any way believe that there should be any toleration of bullying and this kind of behavior. And the damaging, you know, the statements, the things that can be done can be damaging to a person for life. just as much as the affirmations and kinds of things that hopefully some of you have experienced and I have affected me positively for the rest of my life. But some of those damaging statements that you have, you never forget them. You just never forget them. And so it's how you inculcate the values and the behavior and the respect for other human beings. And that's what we need to be doing. And I hope your policies and work with teachers and every employee shouldn't be doing it to one another. Sometimes there's that, it can be maybe it's a banter, but sometimes it's not. It's with a barb, and it has damage. It does damage. So it's that's the reason that I think the policy statement that's in there is very all-encompassing, and it should be sending a very, very clear message that none of this kind of behavior to any student should be tolerated. And then the challenges that you have with the school board and your administration is how you enforce that and how you get the conduct in the classes to instill that and let set the expectation and follow through in terms of what you expect in that behavior. So that is the concern I have with it. But because I just don't know how you deal with it in this kind of a framework and actually have it be effective. I don't think it's going to make a dent in the behavior unless we get at the core.
Madam Chair, that's my
opinion. Senator Chamberlain.
Well, Madam Chair, you couldn't have articulated it better. Bad behavior, don't want it. But stuff like this, where does this end?
I know.
There's too many nuances here. You can't possibly predict every particular situation. And then it opens the door to harassment the other way. I mean, there is no way you could possibly codify that sort of thing. And I know the intent is good, but this just opens the door to more trouble, more problems. Thank you.
Senator Wolf, I apologize. You had your hand up first, and I missed that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm probably just going to reiterate a lot of what you just said, and I'm guessing there's going to be a roll call on this, so I want to make sure that I point out that I will be opposing this bill, but I don't want it to in any way, shape, or form be misconstrued that I don't prohibit bullying or harassment. As a teacher, I work with adolescents, and I think I would be interested to know if there's any school district that doesn't have something in writing currently on this subject. And my opinion is bullying is bullying. I don't care if we're doing it for the reasons that are mentioned here or if we're making fun of a kid because they have a pimple on their forehead. You would not believe the stuff that kids find to make fun of others over. And bullying is bullying. Disrespect is disrespect. And I think it's the climate of the school to I know in health class, I teach it, we talk about, you know, the extremes of harassment and bullying, but we also talk about integrated in every subject I teach, general respect, listening to each other's opinions. You don't have to agree with each other, but you need to be respectful. And that's integrated throughout, you know, classrooms and just the climate of the school. And so I think, as far as I know, every school district has a policy on it, and I don't think we can possibly cover everything in writing, and I'd be afraid of limiting it. I know it says not limited to, but I think we need to emphasize that bullying is bullying, regardless of what reason. If it's something huge like, you know, the ones mentioned, or if it's because, you know, I remember being in junior high, if you wore flood pants, for those of you as old as I am, know what that means. You know, if your ankles were showing, you got made fun of. And so disrespect is disrespect, and I think it needs to be integrated in how it's taught in the schools, not just limited to a written policy. But anyway, I oppose the amendment, but I definitely support prohibiting bullying.
Thank you. Are there other comments or discussion? If not, Senator Wieger has requested a roll call vote. The Secretary will take the roll.
Madam Chair?
No.
Senator Bonhoeff?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Han?
No.
Senator Harrington?
Yes.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Nelson? Senator Nino?
No.
Senator Scheid? Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf? Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres Ray?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Senator Wolf. I'm sorry, Senator Wolf.
Thank you.
No.
It feels.
Okay. She already knew yours.
She said.
Feel
she
your pain.
You're supposed to be.
Five in favor and nine opposed. The amendment does not prevail. Are there any further amendments? Senator Harrington.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A24 amendment. While that's being passed out, as I look through the bill, I will actually make a step back here. Probably the first question I asked in this committee was to get somebody to tell me why we had tenure and what that meant in the context of E-12 education, and I actually did get the answer. It was a remedy for teachers who were being fired due to political, religious, marital status, pregnancy, ethnic backgrounds, way back in the day, before any of us were around or I think anybody thought of us. Now, I can tell you that nobody wants incompetent teachers in the classroom. Probably teachers want them as little as anybody else does. But tenure was a remedy for arbitrary terminations. And it was also a way of stabilizing schools so that they knew the quality of the educators they were going to have. It did not preclude them from terminating employees if they had cause, as we've just had a discussion about. If there is cause, administrators can always move to discharge a teacher, whether the teacher has tenure or whether they're on a continuing contract or if they're a probationary teacher. So I believe that looking at the bill, I do not see a reason for why we would have taken tenure out. It does not seem to have any fiscal impact. It does stabilize schools, and it does not seem to interfere in any way with the good and order of the school system. What I would like to see when we have a discussion about tenure and about probation is to add in the language that was brought to this committee by you. I do believe that we do need to have test scores built into an evaluation system for all teachers. I don't think it's the only factor, but it's certainly one factor, and especially it should be, in my mind, especially in those school districts that are trying to close the achievement gap, it should be a factor that I think we look at very seriously. But beyond that, I do believe we also do need to have local control, the Senator Thompson's favorite phrases, I believe. So they should have significant input into this. And then finally, I also think we need to have some criteria based on the subject matter experts of what is good teaching and what is good pedagogy in the classroom. This amendment would delete the renewable five-year phrase and reinstate the strict and continuing phrase. It would add in those three qualifiers into a teacher evaluation during the probationary period, and it would reinstate the idea that the decision to reemploy a teacher upon completion of probation must be based on those three criteria. As I said, I don't see any fiscal note to this. I don't see any fiscal note to having it taken out. But I don't see that we get anything good out of eliminating teachers that have been there and done that and have been tried and tested and churning their life by saying every 5 years you're going to come up for renewal. Most public employees, cops, firefighters, public works and rec directors, rec leaders, they don't come up for renewal every 5 years. If they continue to perform and perform well, they continue to be employed until their tenure is up. If they fail to perform, whether it's through incompetent performance, bad behavior, or otherwise, then the hiring authority does have the right and should move to terminate them.
Him?
Madam Chair, and maybe counsel can help with this. I'm not aware that other public employees have tenure other than teachers and I think university, but I don't think that park and rec folks or other employees have tenure, do they? And does council know? Maybe not. Maybe I'm asking the wrong person.
Madam Chair and Senator Han, I don't know about the other areas other than teachers.
But Madam Chair, I guess the larger point is that, and I think we talked about this when we originally heard the bill, that there are protections that are in law, constitutional protections against wrongful termination. But most people do not have a tenure provision. We certainly don't as legislators. We have a renewable tenure period that comes up every 2 to 4 years, I guess. But most people do not have that provision. And I know from my experience on the school board, the large number of teachers that were employed in our school district, I don't recall a single one in the 8 years I was on the board that we ever had a dismissal for cause, just you know, that the teacher wasn't doing a good enough job. I don't recall a single one over 8 years. And I just think that this, to me, is a provision that allows school boards to manage the provisions that they have been given to do. We have to give them an ability to manage their employees, and this is a part of it. I think it does provide a way to evaluate performance on a periodic basis, have that performance linked to continuing or perhaps even compensation. That's what the world has as a normal course of how things work. I think it should be included in the bill, and we ought to implement that as far as education is concerned as well.
Senator Harrington.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, while I would agree that the term tenure is almost exclusively used, I believe, in terms of academics and teachers, I think the effective reality is that prison guards don't come up for renewal every 5 years. Cops get hired, you pass probation, and then once you're past probation, your contract isn't going to come up for renewal in 5 years or 3 years. The expectation is as long as you continue to perform competently and adequately, there isn't an issue about your employment. I don't know why we would treat teachers differently than we do virtually every other public employee that I can think of. The term may be different in terms of tenure, but it certainly is not different in the effect and the way that most public employees are handled. In addition, and while I am really delighted that your school district had no one that they needed to fire, I can tell you in the St. Paul School District, and I know from contacts because I've got kids that work for the Minneapolis School District, they do remove teachers on a regular basis for those that are incompetent or unable to perform or who violate rules. So while your district may be exemplary, I do believe that other school districts are exercising the due process rights that are given in statute to remove teachers when there is just cause.
Madam Chair and Senator Hannett, I think public employees in general are covered under the Public Employees Labor Relations Act, and that would be the comparable protections as continuing contract and tenure.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Madam Chair, This area is something that we have wanted to do something about in terms of finding out that there are some school districts, particularly those not QComp districts, who haven't done an evaluation in 7 years, and it's not a part of their regular practice. And so while I may not agree exactly with this language, I don't also agree with Senator Harrington that the answer is just to take it out, because I would have liked to see, and I suspect we'll see later, more substance around teacher evaluations and then making sure that when there's been unsuccessful evaluations, there's an intervention and then, you know, all that sort of thing. So I know Senator Harrington isn't perhaps hearing what I'm saying, but what I'm saying, Senator
Harrington. Yes, I am. Actually,
did you?
I did.
Okay, good. Okay, Senator Harrington. So while I don't think this might be the exact language that I would support, I also don't want to just put it aside and say, because I think we do have to do something to make sure we have ongoing teacher evaluations and that it is linked to being in the classroom. I've also heard from some teachers that are concerned with the way that this is written currently. They're afraid, what if they're just high, even if they're very effective, What if they're high on the salary schedule because they've been around for a long time? Could they just be let go to help solve a budget problem? So for the record, Madam Chair, if you would address that for those teachers that came to see me today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. There's a couple folks here that look like they, I'm getting to read expressions that they may want to have something to say about this. Cecilia Littell and Jim Bartholomew.
Hello, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
My name is Bartholomew.
Jim Bartholomew, and I guess to start it would be more of a question. We were trying to piece this together and understand the implications of the amendment. And I think we were reading it and that this basically would undo the proposed five-year renewable cycle in the bill. And if that's the case, then I think we'd express concern about that because, frankly, having a having the existence of just a continuing contract, and again, I think Senator Bonhoff was alluding to it in your earlier conversation, some districts are very good about doing evaluations and are able to move people if necessary. Other districts are not so good, and we've heard testimony the last few years in both houses about how some teachers past their probationary time have never had an evaluation. And I think one of the benefits of the five-year renewable cycle is that it kind of builds in the need to have those regular evaluations. So getting rid of the five-year renewal for those instances where districts don't do any evaluations of their teachers after probationary status takes the pressure off from doing it. And frankly, we were also looking at the Midwest Regional Education Lab did an evaluation of the seven states in our region on teacher evaluation policies. And frankly, Minnesota came out on the bottom of the heap in terms of the number of criteria that we met relative to the other states in our region about state and local policies for doing teacher evaluation. So anything that would weaken that process, I think, is probably not a good idea from our perspective.
Ms. Rattel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Cecilia Rattel with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I don't have a lot more to add beyond that. You know, we really think that in this time of kind of short and budget shortfalls, that whether the teacher's been there for 3 years or 10 years, if they're ineffective, the school district should not have to continue to employ them. And I see that the, you know, student achievement data is included in this language, which we appreciate. And I think that is very, very important. But the details about, and kind of, I think Senator Bonhoff was getting to this, you know, the details around how much does that include, and what if, you know, their peer review committee, you know, gives them a very high rating and locally selected criteria give them a high rating, but year after year after year, their students are not achieving at the level they should be. And I think even in, you know, St. Paul, the argument could certainly be made that they already have a very good system in place and they are working with teachers to, you know, professionally develop them. And at the same time, students' achievement levels have not gone up as much as we all hope they will. So where do we get those two in line, and how do we move both, you know, teachers in the right direction and student achievement in the right direction? And if you don't require that the student achievement data be included in the professional development, that tie-in together isn't required. So that's all I have to say.
Okay. Senator Harrington.
Madam Chair, while I appreciate your comments, and I agree that we need to have the student achievement data in there, what the mix is on that, I certainly think we should have a thorough vetting of that and make that decision. I know in some of the competitions for the federal dollars, the conversation was it should be at 35%. I think in some of the language talked about 50%. I think we should have that conversation and make our own decision as to where that should be. But in response to your statement about the performance appraisals or the evaluation system. I think you're putting the onus on the wrong place then. When I was chief of police, we were required to do performance evaluation or service ratings every year. The system required it for promotion. It required it for steps. It required it for everything. And that wasn't an option for me not to do performance appraisals on my staff. If I didn't do them, it got city HR, kicked it back to me and said, hey, where's your stuff? You got to have this stuff done on a timely fashion. If you don't have it done in a timely fashion, there are consequences in terms of that. That put the onus on me as the manager to make sure that I was doing my evaluations on a regular basis. It seems like we do the evaluations pretty well on the probationary period. I haven't heard any conversation that says that the twice a year and the evaluations that are done in probation. So clearly we can mandate that and put that onus on the management. It seems to me that by eliminating tenure, you're putting the onus on the teacher, when in fact it's not the teacher's fault that they don't get evaluated. It's the school district or the superintendent or the principal's fault that whether they do or do not get evaluated. But where the hurt comes in is, seeming in this case, it's on the teacher. If I'm the teacher and I'm at 5 years, I don't know whether I'm going to still be there next year. I think that causes me undue stress. It causes a distraction from my duties in the classroom, whereas maybe the onus should be on the principal or on the school district. You have to do these in a timely fashion, and maybe we need to craft language that would put that burden on them to say, we do want teacher evaluations, we do want them done regularly, and we're going to expect school districts getting public dollars to do them. But I think the removing tenure here really just puts the burden on the teacher and not where it really belongs.
Senator Harrington, thank you for your comments. This provision, I think you may have heard yesterday that there was a relative assessment of what the state of this provision. And this was a bill that I carried in the Senate Representative Brandon Peterson is the author in the House. That the House was maybe too prescriptive and the Senate wasn't prescriptive enough. I've already talked with him of wanting to work toward it. To me, I see that 5 year as much of an open a responsibility and a pressure on management to be engaged in this evaluation process. And if that isn't clear enough, that's one of the areas that ought to be addressed, because this shouldn't be just an onus on the teacher. It says to teachers, yes, we want you to keep up your performance and your good work, and we want a system that is engaged in that teacher improvement all along the way. Our weakness in this category was one of the reasons why we scored so low in the race to the top first round application. We're behind in this category, and I think we need to do it. There's been some serious work that's been done, and I think it's going to continue going forward as the bills progress. And I assure you that we'll keep you engaged, that you see what in fact happens, and hopefully we can come out with something that is meaningful and will achieve the ends that we do need. Because it's not meant to be a denigration or of teachers at all. It's trying to get a good, reasonable, fair evaluation process. And if when you look at the spectrum of teachers, you can't be too prescriptive in terms of this one measure, because people are teaching different things in different environments. So there's got to be flexibility. And I think we went the route of leaving that quite open for local districts to determine in the bill. I think there are some more constraints along the way in the original version and what's there, and I think we need to work those things out. But I clearly, having been both in the supervisory role in education as well as a teacher myself, I can be very sensitive to that, and I want what happens to be in the best interest of students ultimately. But that means we've got to have excellent teachers who are satisfied in enjoying what they're doing, in their calling in the field of teaching. So I just offer you that assurance.
Madam Chair, and I do appreciate that. It is one of the concerns even within the test score piece that I did have. I'm not sure, a comment was made to me, well, what's the test score for the gym teacher? What's the test score for the language arts teacher? I'm just not, there's some things that we do very well in measurement. There are certain tests that we certainly can use to measure, but not everything that a teacher does, I think, is subject to quantifiable measures. So I would, again, ask for support on my bill and ask for a roll call.
So any further discussion? Not, a roll call has been requested. Secretary will take the roll.
Madam Chair?
No.
Senator Bonhoff?
No.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Han? Senator Harrington?
Yes.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Nino?
No.
Senator Scheid? Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres Bray?
Yes.
Senator Uyghur?
Yes.
Senator Wolf?
No.
Senator Han is here now.
Senator Han?
No.
There being 5 votes for and 11 against, the motion does not prevail. Are there any further amendments? If not, I have an oral.
Madam Chair.
Excuse me. Oh, yes, Senator Han.
If you're willing, we can take up the amendment that I was offering before, although actually.
Oh, yes. I apologize. I was.
But what I'd like to do is withdraw the earlier amendment and replace it with the A35 amendment.
A35.
And, Madam Chair and members, this is a modification to the earlier amendment that we were discussing, and we've been having some conversation with the people who are at the table, and I think we've reached, I hesitate to say agreement, because I think there may be some parties who are perhaps all right with the language but may not be willing to say they agree. But at any rate, what this does is it changes the provisions to allow for suspending a teacher with pay for the first 60 days, which is what we did orally, but it also puts in a trigger on lines 34 and 35 of the first page of the amendment that requires that the hearing be held within 30 days of the board action proposing discharge unless both parties agree otherwise. There's also on page 2 of the amendment, on lines 2.6 and 2.7, some additional language on page 35 that conforms to the change we're making on page 34. And I think it might be helpful if we could invite the parties that were discussing this earlier to come to the table and just to make sure that we've gotten this relatively where.
And Senator Han, does line 2.4, 2.5, when it's saying it applies to all discharge actions initiated by the board after that date, that would include superintendents? Senator Stevens' concern?
Madam Chair, that is not a change. That was in the initial amendment. I think that just has to do with the effective date.
So you didn't address the superintendent issue?
No, Madam Chair, we did not. As I understand it from...
I'm not sure that that language couldn't be interpreted as such.
Well, perhaps, Madam Chair, but I'm taking Mr. Kite at his word that this language exists in all the contracts of all the superintendents, and it would change as soon as this law would be changed. So,
Mr. Kite, did you want to respond to this?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we've worked with this outside, and we're agreeable to these changes.
Ms. Altrager?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I've been trying to reach our general counsel and other counsel, and I've not been able to reach them. We would like to say that we could promise to put things in the contracts, too, and make sure that they stayed in there. I will just leave it at that. I do believe that there might be some serious concern about the time frame, that it might be too short, specifically on line 1.34. and that 30 days may be difficult. And I would say, excuse me, that I would again go back to what I originally said about the suspension of pay. We think that that is a real problem.
Mr. Aronson?
Madam Chair, members, I think Senator Hand should be commended for working this out on the fly in the hallway and your staff as well. This is a substantive change from what this amendment looked like initially. The idea was to streamline the process. This streamlines the process. And I know admin has some internal issues about how to do this, but speaking on behalf of school principals who are also subject to this statute, we think we can work within this and that this is a very good change in that 60 days, and that addresses the issues that Senator Hand was trying to get to, and I think that the committee would agree with as well on the question of making these cases happen quickly but fairly. So we do support the amendment, Madam Chair, in the way that it's been crafted.
And Ms. Kelleher, would you like to look like you would like to address it as well?
Madam Chairman, committee members, Grace Kelleher with the School Boards Association. I'd like to thank Senator Hahn for his dedication to the topic. This is a big one for communities and school boards to deal with, and important and timely. We're really happy with the language as it's stated here. We think it's clear when it starts, clear what the timelines are, and gives boards a way to not fund employees ongoingly. So what happens is present law allows us to pay these employees until they're fired. And this is a much shorter, more abbreviated version. Cities of the first class, or school districts of the first class, have authority presently that allows them to put employees on non-paid leave for these kinds of offenses. So it's really bringing us in tune to what you allow Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth to do.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further discussion on this? Senator Bonham?
Madam Chair, just out of respect, I'm going to hold off to support it because I want to give Ms. Alschwager a chance to check with her counsel. And I would have preferred to have the superintendents just be included just for whatever. So,
Madam Chair.
Senator Sieben.
To that point, counsel did help me draft another amendment. So after we deal with this one, I have an amendment to redefine what teacher is under this section to ensure that it includes superintendents.
Any other discussion? If not, Senator Harrington.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I do have a bit of concern about the kind of the time frames on this. Having run an internal affairs unit that investigates misconduct by police officers with trained investigators who do criminal investigations, which have a very high threshold, we typically can't get them done in a 30-day period. Witnesses have to be obtained, statements. There are legal protections against self-incrimination, against the property rights that preclude us from being able to do our internal affairs investigations in a 30-day period. And I'm just not sure if a school district is going to have the means or the skills to be able to do this in the time frame that's set up here. The other question I have is there any provision here for vets? When we have had cases that involve veterans, we've been told that you can't fire them without pay. There is a veterans hearings process that also has to be put into place there, and I don't see any recognition of how this rule would overlay with veterans preference or veterans rights bills, which is another category that I would want to make sure that's addressed.
Thank you, Senator Harrington. Would the expression on 1.35 work if an investigation isn't completed, unless otherwise agreed to by both parties? Or might you, in fact, have one side say, well, we want the hearing even if it's not ready? Or I'm not sure if that would accommodate a further delay.
Chair, typically the board would do
Mr.
its investigation Aronson. Before the board adopted the resolution.
Say this again?
The board would do its investigation and take as long as it wanted to do the investigation, if it took 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, then adopt their resolution proposing the individual for discharge.
Okay.
So there's enough time to do the investigation. This is once the investigation is completed, the board makes its decision to propose someone for discharge. that triggers the 30-day hearing and then the 60-day end. And even if that 60-day end didn't work, as the way Senator Hand has constructed this, it just means after 60 days the employee would have to have a claim for back pay. They wouldn't get paid after 60 days.
Does that answer the question? Okay. Is there any further discussion on the motion? The motion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion prevails. Senator Seaman?
Madam Chair, I have, it's also called the A35 amendment. Yes, it crossed paths when Senator Hands is being So it's dated, or it's timed, 7:57 p.m.
Well, you actually beat him, but so do.
My understanding, and council can help, but this just clarifies that under this, only applying for this subdivision or section, that superintendent would be included in the definition of teacher. And I take Mr. Kite at his word that all superintendent contracts right now are have this provision in their contract. This would just ensure that in the future it would be something that could be potentially negotiated or discussed in future contracts.
Thank you. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Is there any discussion on this proposal?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, I guess I would like to invite Mr. Kite to come and just give his opinion. I think I know what it is, but I don't want to speak for him, so if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you. I learned a few years ago that you should read it first before you give a quick opinion. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I have read it, and I'm not quite sure how to answer, but here's what I think what it is. We want to be a little you want to be a little careful with. I would embrace this. We would love to have superintendents have continuing contract rights in the state and not be subjected to this every 3 years getting tossed out on your ear if a board opinion changes. I'm not sure you all want to change that. So I'm trying to sort out here if this only speaks to this specific section or if it gives you us broader rights. If it gives us broader rights, I would speak greatly for it. If it gives us only rights in this section, we would still be okay with it because we're not trying to have something special for superintendents. But you all want to make pretty sure what you're doing, I think.
Dr. You want to address what those sections mean in general?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, so the amendment adds in the subdivisions 7, 9, 13, and 16. Let's see if that my handwriting is right. But subdivision, 7 is the termination of contract after the probationary period, which is where the right to the notice for the hearing and or arbitration is located under that subdivision. That's just the heading for the subdivision. But then the other subdivision 9 is the grounds for termination. 13 is the immediate discharge. And then 16, I think, was wrong. I think that should be 15. I think that's which 15 is hearing and determination by the arbitrator, which is that arbitration section, because 16 is decision. Actually, it should be both. Madam Chair, members, I think we just need to add in subdivision 15 into that.
And
16 is already there, but 15 into that. Into the new
you want to incorporate that? Incorporate
yes, Madam Chair, I incorporate
add
that.
Add 15 in there. Ms. Kelleher.
Madam Chairman, members, Grace Kelleher with the School Board Association. Madam Chairman, we are really concerned here that this would make superintendents more similar to teachers with continuing contract rights. And presently, they are more like an at-will employee of the board. This would be seriously problematic to amend them into this definition, and we ask the committee oppose this piece. I certainly believe, as Senator Bonhoff does, that superintendents fall under the statute we've been talking about, but I think this is going to block us up tremendously in regard to getting rid of problematic superintendents.
So what you're saying, this actually might take it further away from what the intent is there and what your intent, Senator Stephen, would be.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I'd just ask for counsel's opinion on this. Does this actually subject the superintendents to those provisions that you identified, or is it only citing those subdivisions because it's in reference to the Senator Hand's provision?
Madam Chair and members, it changes the definition of teacher in those subdivisions to include superintendent. So the one subdivision seven does talk about the continuing contract rights for teachers after their probationary period. That they can elect to have a continuing contract after that period with the district.
They don't have that.
That subdivision also contains the provisions about being able to request a hearing or arbitration in the 14 days after the written notice and requesting a hearing.
Madam Teacher.
Thank you.
That works too.
We've all been going too long.
Madam Chair,
Senator Stephen, I actually have at one time. It's probably too old to use right now, but credential to be a superintendent. So. But I like the label of teacher.
I'll withdraw this amendment at this time, and maybe it's something we can continue to work on before.
I think we understand the intent there,
Madam Mr. Chair, Kite? Members of the committee, first of all, I'm shocked that the School Board Association wouldn't want superintendents to have continuing contract rights. But I just wanted just to leave your concern. I'm just going to quote from you, right? This is in the model contract adopted by MSBA and MASA, and it is in Article 4 under duration, expiration, termination during the term, et cetera, et cetera. And in Section 3, termination during the term, it says, the superintendent's employment may be terminated during the term of this contract only for cause as defined in Minnesota Statute 122A.40, Subdivision 9, and Subdivision 13. Those are the immediate discharge clauses of the law. So that's what every superintendent contract right now says. So I understand your concern. I actually think it's I think we have it covered. We absolutely want to say to you that we are not looking to have superintendents somehow exempted. If there is misbehavior, serious misbehavior by a teacher, a principal, or a superintendent, such that a board feels they need to terminate them, let's make the process move as quickly as possible. So I hope that alleviates the concern. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have an oral amendment that was missed on page 44. You may remember it has to do with the single-purpose authorizers, and we had a fairly thorough hearing on that. And it involves just on line 44.14 deleting the first four words, no more than three. I think you heard from Ms. Sundin. They were kind of number four on the list, working with a group of teachers and having it kind of a new concept for charters that really is should be allowed to go forward. And there may be others, and I think that the single purpose authorizers have been going on long enough for us to have a comfort level that we don't have to limit in numbers. So I would appreciate your if we would strike the no more than three on line 44.1. Is there any discussion? Not all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much. Are there any further amendments? Senator Bonner.
It's not an amendment, but could have solved the problem, I would be here with an amendment to put the MELF provisions in the bill. The MELF provisions in particular supporting the Parent Aware and the Early Childhood Scholarships. I think that that is more important than perhaps anything else we could do. I think it equals the focus on literacy, that it is that important for the overall achievement of our children. But I haven't figured out a way to pay for it. So I'm not yet going to put it in, but I reserve the right to come and see you, Madam Chair, between now and our finance stop, because I'm really actually working hard on it. So,
well, and Senator Bonhoff, remember that this is an early time for a finance bill. And we do have a long way to go. I know this was complicated by kind of a three-committee jurisdiction,
yeah,
and some question as to who had jurisdiction over what in terms of the finances and where that proposal would be. So that doesn't mean that there isn't going to be continued dialogue along that line. So thank you for raising the issue, because I think we will be visiting it again.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Senator Hand is here. There. Senator Harrington.
I just want to kind of piggyback on that, because I'd like to also have a conversation about the all-day kindergarten that was in Governor Dayton's original bill. I feel very strongly that is another essential component in getting kids ready. We kept talking about, you know, ready for K. I think if we haven't gotten them ready for K, the all-day kindergarten is the next best stop. So I would also like to have that conversation with you about that.
That will be a continued one, because even within that whole early childhood area, there are differing views on where to best put the money. Some, even Dr. Rolnick says at-risk 3- and 4-year-olds is a better investment than all-day K. So there's a lot of things swirling around. And for right now, we have left our monies intact. One of the concerns was with the learning readiness. That proposal would have taken that money into scholarships, and it would have been available to fewer people and put greater restrictions on it. And so there's a number of things that I think need to continue to be discussed. And it's a challenging one, because of that overlap into the federal, where the big money is, would require federal waivers and that type of thing, too. So there's still work to be done. But meanwhile, we do have good programs and parental choice in making those. And I think it's important for the work of those entities, be it Learning Readiness, ECFE, the Head Start, to get the good information out to parents to make those choices. Until we have a good track record that can assure the quality and in the results, perhaps even more than in just the framework for in the beginning. So there's more work, and I think we will continue to be concerned, because the fact that it's not here doesn't mean that we're not attentive to the importance of the early childhood.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
For
future success. So. I think we may be, Senator Sieben?
Well, Madam Chair, since it's my birthday, I don't really want to extend this debate too much longer, but I would just like to say, too, that I encourage you to continue to work with our teachers. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that today I had a large group of teachers from my area who came in to visit with me and are really concerned with some of the provisions in this bill. They feel, rightly or wrongly, that they're being attacked by the freeze that's in this bill, by some of the things that we're doing to change collective bargaining and tenure rights, and some of the ways that power is being supplanted to school boards over their salary negotiations. So as much as you can, I encourage you and other members of this committee to continue to reach out to our teachers, since they are who educate our students and such an important component to our quality education system in the state.
Thank you, Senator Sieben. Senator Bonhoff.
Sorry. Madam Chair, and I want to echo what Senator Sieben said, because I, too, have heard from teachers in my districts. I had early on opposed the wage freeze, and it is in the bill. And so I actually may be surprised at some, but I'm going to support the bill. And so I wanted to go on record saying that there are many things in this bill that I don't think are there yet, and that I am quite concerned about, and the collective bargaining rights and preserving that is one of them, and cutting integration aid, without giving them the tools to fight, you know, all of those things I'm very concerned about. And so I want it to be on the record that I am voting for the bill so that I continue to have the conversation to work on it, because there are also things in here that I'm quite proud of and proud of the work of this committee. And so by being for something doesn't mean that I put my stamp of approval on it. It means that there is a framework here to work with, and I honor and respect the work of you, Chair Olson, and would like to continue this work, and particularly bringing teachers to the table when it comes to the teacher evaluation piece.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, request a roll call, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
There's no further comments. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move that the staff prepare the document coded SC8210 as amended as a committee bill and be introduced as a committee bill to be authored by Senator Olson. I'd like to also allow staff to make any technical adjustments necessary to reflect the will of the committee.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. You've heard the motion. If there's no further discussion, the Secretary will take the roll.
Madam Chair?
Aye.
Senator Bonoff?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
Yes.
Senator Daley?
Yes.
Senator DeKreif?
Yes.
Senator Han?
Aye.
Senator Harrington?
No.
Senator Cruz?
Yes.
Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Senator Nino?
Yes.
Senator Sieben?
No.
Senator Stumpf?
No.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Torres-Ray?
No.
Senator Uyghur?
No.
Senator Wolf?
Yes.
There being 11, 4, and 5 opposed, the motion prevails and the bill is adopted and will be sent for introduction. So I want to thank committee members. We will be continuing to meet. This isn't a an ending, but I think it'll be an ongoing process, and we still have more work to do, both in policy considerations and dealing with some of the fiscal issues too. Yeah. So thank you for all your hard work and your cooperation and goodwill thus far.
Thank you.
Senator Thompson.
Just a quick question, Madam Chair. Given the schedule next week, are we having normal committee, or do we know a schedule yet?
I don't believe we'll be having committee, because this bill is going to be going to vote to taxes and finance and to the floor, and so we probably will not be meeting this next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very well, I have time.